beginning of the parsha, it talks about the dedication of the Mishkan, and the Yom HaShmini is the Shmini L'Miluin. And Moshe Rabbeinu says to Klal Yisrael, take a seer izim l'chatos, shor v'ayel l'shlomim, ki hayoim Hashem nira aleichem. Because today is the day that the Shekhinah will descend into the midst of Klal Yisrael. So Aaron HaKoyen does the Avodah, and the Shekhinah doesn't come. So Rashi brings down the Pasuk Chof Gimel, Vayavon Moshe v'Yarnel, Oyel Moyed v'Yetzu v'Yivorchu v'Sa'om v'Yeira Kvoid Hashem ol Kol Ha'om. So Rashi says, Kevin Shero Aaron Shekorvu Kol HaKorbonos. Aaron saw, I brought all the Korbonos, V'Nasa Kol HaMaisim, I did all the Maisim I was supposed to do. And the Shekhinah did not yet come down. He was mitzayer. For Aaron says, I know HaKadosh Baruch Hu's angry at me. And it's my fault that the Shekhinah did not come down. Omaloi l'Moshe, Moshe achi, kacha sisili shenichnasti v'nispayashti. Says, Moshe, you got me into this, and now I'm embarrassed. So the pasuk says, miyad nichnas Moshe, imoy u'bikshu rachmim v'yard ashkin l'Yisrael. So Moshe and Aaron were mevakesh rachmim, and they were able to bring the Shekhinah. So Rashi tells us that Aaron HaKoyein sees that the Shekhinah doesn't come, and what is his reaction? His reaction is, it's my fault. I'm the one to blame. I take responsibility for the Chet HaEgel. Chazal tell us that when Aaron approached the Mizbeach, he suddenly backed off. Because he saw in the Mizbeach the vision of an Egel. And he felt that he was not yet a roi to bring a korban. And the Mizbeach reminded him of the Egel Hazov. And he took achrayus for that Avera. So Rabbi Yeruchim, the Mira Mashkiach, says that we learn a tremendous lesson from Aaron. Aaron could easily have said, it's everybody else's fault. I'm the Kohen Gadol. I try to avoid the chait by telling people to bring their jewelry. I didn't dream that there would be such an excitement to bring jewelry to build an egel. It all happened by mistake. I was trying to avoid it. But all these oivdei avodah zarah nikkers, it's their fault that there's no Shekhinah. Aaron doesn't look at it this way. Aaron looks at it, then Aaron says, it's my problem. I'm the one who's achroy. I own the problem. And that's the way a yid needs to look at things in the world. Everybody has to take achrayus for what goes on. You can't blame other people for your problems or for Klal Yisrael's problems. Person has to be able to accept responsibility for himself and even for what happens to the klal. The Briska Rav always says over by Yoina. Yoina is on the boat and there's a terrible storm and all the sailors take out their various forms of avodah zarah and they start davening to their various getchkas. And the storm doesn't abate. So they finally schlep up Yoina to the deck. They make a geirul and it lands on Yoina. And what is Yoina's response? B'shali hasar ha-godol hazeh aleichem. It's my fault that the storm is taking place. Yoina could have turned to them and he said, You idiots. There's a storm, so you're taking out your tselem? Are you crazy? You're worshipping Buddha? Or whatever other narishkeit you worship? The bist meshigge. You guys are avoiding the Zoranikers. That's why there's a storm. The Rebbeinu wants to kill you. That's not what Yoinah says. Yoinah says, B'shali hasar hagodol hazeh. It's my fault. And that has to be the attitude that we have. We have to take achrayis to what goes on. I think I've told over the Maisa, the Munkacher Rebbe had a tremendous ava for the Saba Kadisha of Shloima Alfandri. It was a Svardika Chacham, lived in Eretz Yisroel, and he had a correspondence with him. And he held this Saba Kadisha to be his Rebbe. And one day the Saba Kadisha invited the Munkacher Rebbe to come to Eretz Yisroel. So the Munkacher Rebbe made hachonas. And those days it wasn't a one-day journey. And he made his way to Eretz Yisroel. And he was greeted by thousands of Hasidim. But he wasn't interested in fearing Tish. He wanted to meet his Rebbe, and that was it. And finally the day came, and there was a tremendous reunion. The Hasidim were able to watch him embrace his Rebbe. And then they went into a room by themselves to speak. The Gabbai, who wanted to stay in the room with the Rebbe, to hear what he would speak to the Saba Kadisha about, was told by the Rebbe to leave. So he left the room and he stuck his ear on the door. And he hears the conversation. And the words of the conversation would ring in his ears the rest of his life. There was first a discussion what language they would use. The Saba Kadisha did not really speak Galiziana Yiddish. So they agreed to speak in Ivrit. So the Munkacher Rebbe says, Tagidi li, Mosai Yovoi Moshiach. He asked the Rebbe, the Bekubel, the Chacham, when is Moshiach coming? So the Chacham says, Yesh Anashim Shema Akvim is Agula. There are people who are holding back the Geula. The Gabbai suddenly hears the Rebbe start crying hysterically. And he hears between sobs, the Rebbe says, Ha'im gam ani me ma'at ve'ha-geula. Am I one of the people that's holding back the Geula? The Munkacher Rebbe, he wrote Sforim, was a Baki b'kol Chavre Ashas. And what does he turn to the Rebbe? The Rebbe says, the Chacham says, Mashiach isn't coming. And right away, what's his reaction? Am I the cause that Mashiach didn't come? How many of us ask ourselves, could I be doing more to bring Mashiach? Could I be doing more to make sure that the Geula should come quicker? I'll tell you a story about a Yid who lived not so long ago, who did just that. It's Grada, a Yid in Eretz Yisroel. Name is Rabbi Loza Sharabi. He lives in a city in Israel called Rakosim. During the war in Gaza a few years ago, Tovshin Samach Tes, so we had occasion to end up in Bnei Brak. And he davened in a Beis Medrash called Benedict, which is on the Rechol Sokolov, not that that's so important. And he went into this minyan to daven Meirev. And he takes a seat and he notices standing next to him is a very choshev looking Yid. So he thinks, very nice. Not only do I have an opportunity to daven Meirev in Bnei Brak, but I'm sitting next to a Yid that looks like a Dahoy ben a Yid, a Choshev a Yid, so he's very excited. But he doesn't know yet what experience he's going to have. They get up to Shmoyne Esrei. He's davening next to this Yid and he starts to hear the Yid cry. And every bracha he hears koilus and tears and sobs. Choneinu me'itcha deyabina v'haskel. Hashiveinu avinu l'say rasecha. Selach lanu avinu kichaton. One brach after the yek, the tears and the sobbing and the emotion. He never heard a tefillah like that on a regular weekday. He gets up to Moedim and he hears the Yishtafus HaNefesh. He's pouring out his nefesh HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he couldn't move because he was standing within his Dalet Amos. He had to wait till he finished, and he's listening, and he's able to hear the sobs and the crying and the words, and he's up till a kind of tzor, and he starts to pour out his heart. And he thanks HaKadosh Baruch Hu for everything he has. And then he hears an amazing thing. The Yid turns to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and he says, Rabbeinu Shel Olam, I can't deal with the Tsar of Klal Yisrael. I can't deal with the death and with the pain and with the sorrow, with the terrorism and all of that. Rabbeinu Shel Olam, take my life as a kapara for Klal Yisrael. I'm willing to give you my life. Just stop the terror. And eventually he finishes Shemoneh Esrei. He says Aleinu when he leaves. So the Yid now decides he's got to find out who this was. There was one other person left in the shul. He finished davening so late. The minyan was already finished. Everybody had left. So he turns to the shamus in the shul. He says, who is that Yid? So he says to him, he's a grandson of Rabbi Yeruchim Levovitz. He's a Rosh Koil in Tel Aviv, a koil called Shari Torah. His name is Rav Tzvi Kaplan. Not the same with Tzvi Kaplan, but has a yeshiva in Yushalayim. Okay. The Yid wasn't going to forget this davening so quickly. The Yid says, Rabbi Shem, take my life as a kapor. A week later, he's eating breakfast. He looks at the newspaper and he sees in big dark letters the news that Rav Tzvi Kaplan was nifter. The levaya is going to be today. He was nifter from one day to the next. This year the Lozer Sharabi knew why he was nifter. Because he gave his life for Klal Yisrael. The Rebbein Shem was mekabel his tefillah. He was a Yid who felt that I have an achrayis to Klal Yisrael. And an achrayis, ad kidei kach, he was ready to give his life. We're not expected to do that. But we're expected to care. To have a shtickle of feeling when we daven. How many more yidden have to be killed? How many more bombs? How many more terrorist attacks? How many more people have to be murdered? How soon is it going to take for us to beg HaKadosh Baruch Hu to ka b'shoifer gadol l'cheilu seinu? To say es tzemach David abdecha with a shtickle kavona because we're achroi for Klal Yisrael. Aaron felt that achroi. And we have to feel that we're also achroi for Klal Yisrael. That's one side of what we can learn from Aaron. But the truth of the matter is, it goes both ways. The idea of feeling that it's my achrayus is also for the positive. In Pirkei Avos Hillel says, "Im ein ani li mi li." If I don't take care of myself, if I'm not mekabel achrayus for myself, then nobody else is going to do it. We can't wait for somebody else to pick us up, to spoon feed the Gemara, to make sure that we do well, to help us solve all our problems. We have to take achrayus for ourselves. They tell over a maisa that there was a shul made up of poor people. And came to Simchas Torah they were aware that next door in the shtiebel where wealthy people davened, after every hakafah, they had a big barrel of whiskey. And after every hakafah, people would go over and drink a couple of shots of schnapps. And the next hakafah would be even more lebedik than the first. By the time they got up to the seventh hakafah, they were mamish, as lebedik as could be. And the poor people, they never couldn't afford any vodka. So their hakafas did not have that same excitement. So the gabbai got up and he said, Raboisai, I have an eitzah. Every Shabbos you go home, you drink a l'chaim in the house, you have a shtickel schnapps by the table. So listen, I have an eitzah. Every Shabbos when you come back from mincha, you'll bring a little cup with the leftover schnapps that you had by the sukkah, and you'll pour it into the barrel. And by the time next Simchas Torah comes around, we'll have a barrel full of filled with mashke, and we'll have a kofas like the gvirim. So everyone thought this was a brilliant idea. You figure every Shabbos, everybody brings a little shot glass of vodka, pours it into the barrel. By the time the year is over, they'll have enough mashke that they'll have a kofas that will last until the Tu Bishvat. So they're all excited. Comes Simchas Torah. They dance the first hakafah, and now the hakafah is over. Adkan hakafah rishon, and everybody runs to the barrel. The chedras kodesh, they're going to drink their vodka, and everyone digs in, takes a drink, and they're drinking water. They look at each other, and nobody could really look the other guy in the face because everybody understood that each guy figured, everybody's bringing vodka, so if I bring water, it's not going to stare anything. What's the problem? So I'll bring water, they'll bring vodka, no one's going to know the difference. But everybody had the same cheshbon. So came Simchas Torah after the first hakafah, they were drinking Perrier instead of Smirnoff. And it wasn't much of a hakafah. The problem is that when you rely on somebody else, nothing gets accomplished. We have to take achrayis for ourselves. There's a pasuk that says, "Hoytzia mi masker nafshi lohoydeis hashemecha." David HaMelech says, "Hoytzia mi masker nafshi, take my nefesh out of its shackles." Rabbi Leo Lapian brings down. There's a medrash. The medrash says, a mussel, a person held a bird in his hand, and he closed his fist around the bird, and he says to somebody, they say the bird can fly, why can't this bird fly? So the guy says, idiot, if you opened up your hand, you'll see it fly. Zok David HaMelech, Hoytzia mi masker nafshi, people wonder, why can't they steig? Why can't they grow? Why can't they vaxleis in learning? Hoytzia mi masker nafshi, get rid of the chains that you've tied yourself up with. You gave yourself the taivas. You surrounded yourself with the yetzer hara. Get rid of your yetzer haras and you'll see, Hoytzia mi masker nafshi lohoydeis hashemecha. But we imprison ourselves. We build chains and fences around ourselves. Whether it's the chains of the Yetzer Hara, or our image, or our imagination, or our self-perception, I can't do it, I won't do it, I'm not this kind of a guy, I'm not so frum, I'm not so cool, I'm not so this, I'm not so that, and the male, I can't be anything. You got to stop thinking like that. You have to realize the only thing that's preventing you from steiging is the fact that you don't allow it to happen. Bachrim come on Purim, and every Bachar, Baruch Hashem, wants to grow, wants to steig. And every Bachar with his personal issue. And certainly, it's my job to do what I can, as it is with every Rebbe. But unless a Bachar takes the achrayas, nothing can happen. You tell over a Maisa, the town of Zembrov, in the old, in Europe, in Poland, there was a cemetery that was right near the village. fence of the cemetery bordered on the village. And there was an ongoing fear amongst the people, especially the children, don't go into the cemetery. And the kids were convinced that at 12 o'clock midnight, the dead would come to daven. And if you passed by the cemetery and your name was called, that means that they were davening and they called you up for an aliyah. And if you didn't go in and get called up, you would die within a month. And if you went in, you had to go in with your eyes closed, because if you saw any of the dead that you recognized, they wouldn't let you leave. So it was a very scary thing. So anyway, the kids were petrified. They wouldn't be caught near the cemetery. There was one kid who said, it's a joke. It's garnished. I am going in. The other kid said, you're crazy. He said, it's ridiculous. I'm going in. So it was a winter night. Kid's wearing a long coat, bundled up. And his friends say, okay, wise guy. So they give him a stick with a sharp point at the end. This to make sure that you did it. Here's a stick. You stick that near one of the graves. So tomorrow, when it's daylight, we'll go check if you actually went in. So the kid's real macho. He takes the stick, walks into the cemetery, and the ground was very hard, so he had a hard time getting the stick near the graves. He finally found a recently dug grave where the ground was softer, and he smashed the, took the stick and he wedged it into the ground with all of his keiches, and he turned to leave, and he felt himself being pulled back. The dead were pulling him back. And he gave a scream, a hysterical scream, help! And the kids were too scared to run in and help him, because the dead were pulling him back. So they ran to their parents. They said, we killed him! We killed him! We talked him into going to the cemetery! Mamash, we killed him! So the people went into the cemetery, where they found the kid had fainted next to the grave, with the stick stuck between himself and into his coat, all the way into the ground. So the kid had tried to leave, but his coat was stuck because he banged the stick through his coat. And he was so convinced the dead were pulling him back that he fainted on the spot after giving his hysterical scream. As I saw this story, I thought to myself, isn't that the way we are? We think that something's pulling us back. We think the dead are pulling us back. We think the Sviv is pulling us back. My Rebbe is pulling me back. My Chavrusa, my roommate, my English teacher, the cook, who knows what? Whatever it is, everything is pulling me back. The truth of the matter is you're pulling yourself back. You're holding yourself back. You got yourself stuck on your own clothing, on your own midos. It's your achrayus. It's your responsibility. B'sheli hasar ha-godol hazeh. We have to take achrayus for ourselves. And when you take achrayus for yourself, so what can you accomplish? So Yeshua, when he brought Klal Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael, is a Moir de Gezach he did. Vayayimah Yeshua al B'nei Yisrael. Goyshu Heinu. V'shimu as Divrei Hashem Alekeichem. Yeshua says to Christ, oh, come here and listen to the Dvar Hashem. So Rashi says, based on a Medrash, Goyshu heinu tzimtzei me'ez kulon bein shnei badei ha'oroin. He took Gans Klal Yisrael, and they all fit between the two badim of the oroin. How much space was there between the two badim of the oroin? An amma. Gans Klal Yisrael fit between the two badei ha'oroin. Ze echad min ha'makoy me'shehechzik mu'at des ha'meruba. This is one of the places where a little bit of turf was able to hold a lot of people. So Yeshua says, Vayomi Yeshua bezois teidun. With this you should know, ki keil chai mikir bechem, that there's a Ribbono shel Olam in your midst. What is the lesson? How did every Yid feel when God's Klal Yisrael is between the two Badei Ha'orayim? Every Yid saw himself as the one between the two Badei Ha'orayim. Every Yid believed, I am the one between the Shnei Badei Ha'orayim. But God's Klal Yisrael is there. But yet it's me between the Shnei Badei Ha'orayim. Little me. Standing in front of Gantz Klal Yisrael between the Shnei Badei Ha'orayim. What does that mean? That it's my achrayus. And when every Yid feels it's my achrayus, v'zayis teinu ki keil chai bekir b'chem, then you'll come to know that there's a Ribbono shel Olam. When every Yid takes that achrayus, when every Yid knows he has the potential, the koyach, to be a manhig, to be a leader in his own way. That's how you build Klal Yisrael. That's how you take Klal Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael and perform miracles. So there's a few things you need to know. There's one idea that I want to share with you, which is the Gei of the Parshas Purim, which is this Shabbos. The Avoid of the Purah Aduma was a Moiridik Avoida. Basically a chayk, but there's an interesanta halacha that relates to Parah Aduma. It's brought down in the Gemara, Masechtas Purim, Mishnayis, that the Yidden built special courtyards on top of pillars where women who were pregnant would be brought, where they would give birth to their children. The reason why the courtyards were built on stilts is because they wanted to make sure there was no tumas hatahoyim that was possible to be metame anybody. The children were born in total and maximum tahara. And they were raised in these special places for months, for years, till they would be old enough to ride on top of a donkey on a big board that again would avoid tumas hatahoyim. And they would be taken to fill up the water that would eventually be used for the mechapas. Why did they go through such tremendous extremes? What was going on here? Why did they do this? The answer is because when they did the avoida of the Parah Aduma, they would take the kohen who would do the avoida and touch him with the sheretz. And they would make him tummy. Then they would have the kohen go to the mikveh, and he would become tahor. But he wasn't totally tahor, he was only a tevul yoim. A tevul yoim is not complete tahara. For complete tahara, you need harif shemesh, the sun has to set. But they wouldn't let the sun set, they would take the kohen, who was tummy from a sheret, and they would put him in the mikveh, and then he would do the avoid of the Parah Aduma. Why? Lehoitzi milibon shel tzedukim. Because the tzedukim used to say, you have to have har of shemesh for the kohen to do the avoid of the Parah Aduma. So in order to be mighty from the heart of the tzedukim who said that the kohen has to be totally tahar, they vidavka with metame the koyen and had him do the avoid as a tful yoin. But since they were mizalzel in the avoid by being metame the koyen, they were afraid that people would belittle and denigrate the avoid of the poraduma. So they raised these children in special neighborhoods on top of pillars of total tahara so that nobody should think they were lessening the chashivas of the tahara of the poraduma. Zotrib Shamshin Rifol Hirsch, there must be something very important here that they would go through so much tircha to prove this slightly insignificant point Tavul Yayin versus Harif Shemesh, big deal. And because of that, they have to make neighborhoods on stilts and raise children away from society for years so that they can be able to draw the water b'tahara. What are the odds that you'll be tummy if you didn't grow up in a neighborhood on top of pillars? And why is it so important? So Tvul Yoyim, Harav Shem is for my nafkamina. So he says there's a big nafkamina. That Stukim said, in order to achieve a level of purity, it's got to be perfect. It's got to be Harav Shemesh. You got to be perfect. And what they were trying to say is nobody's perfect, so don't bother. Give up. And the Chachamim was saying no. The first step in the right direction is everything. The first move in the right direction is the difference between Tuma and Tara. Make the first move! And that's the Hara! And then the rest will be taken care of. But make the first move. And that lesson is so important that it's kedai to build neighborhoods on stilts and raise children for years so they can draw the water so you can be metame the koyen and do the avodah with a tful yoyim to make the statement. One step in the right direction is a lot. Don't underestimate what you're achieving. But start. It's up to you to make the first step. No one's going to do it for you. Make the first step. And that's all you need. There's one more thing you need to know. Don't give up. One of the biggest problems is yish. People give up on themselves. There's a maisa that's told over. It's a true story, actually. Told over by Rabbi Yaakov Galinsky. There used to be, in Poland, there was a fair where all the business people would come to buy merchandise in Leipzig. And there was a poor couple that always had problems, they could never make ends meet. And one day they decided, let's raise money, we'll go to Leipzig, we'll buy merchandise, we'll sell it, we'll make a little bit of a profit, we'll pay off some of our chovos, and maybe to Bislach we'll be able to put our lives back on track. So they squandered whatever they could, they saved money here and there. They ate less, they fed their children less, they bought less clothing, they saved whatever they could, and they were moiser pruta to pruta, they borrowed a little bit of money, till finally they had a very chashiv amount of money. The money was placed in a purse, and the husband decided the wife would go to Leipzig and make the purchases, and then she would come back and they would start a business. So she goes to the fair. She goes from one stall to the next. She finally finds the right place to buy. She negotiates a good price. And she's about to pay, and she discovers that the purse with all the money is missing. She doesn't know what to do with herself. Everything they've saved and they've squandered and everything they've worked for all this time is lost. And suddenly she hears somebody screaming on the other side of the fairgrounds, I'm rich! I found the purse! I'm rich! So she hops right away. He must have found her purse. So she runs in that direction. And she says to the guy, Baruch Hashem, you found my purse. Thank you so much. He says, Entschuldigt? She says, that's my purse. He says, it was your purse, but now it's mine. She says, what are you talking about? He says, what do you mean, what am I talking about? It's a Mefurish Gemara. Gemara says, Amoitzei Aveda v'Rishus HaRabim. If you haven't been Aveda v'Rishus HaRabim, it's yours. So this woman doesn't know from Gemara, from Elul Metzias. She doesn't know from no chacham. She says, "What are you talking about?" He says, "Listen, I learned Gemara. It's Mefurash Gemara. That's it. I find an aved the Rishus Rabim. It's mine." So she says, "I'm going with you to a din Torah." So at first he doesn't want to go. He says, "What are you talking about? Din Torah? It's a Pashin Halacha." She says, "We're going to Rav Yitzchak Elchanan inspector, and he's going to paskin." No, the woman's screaming and then hollering. He has no choice. He follows her to Rav Yitzchak Elchanan. Rav Yitzchak Elchanan says to the guy, "Nu, so what are you taina? What's your claim?" So he says, "Feirish halacha, moitzim mitziyah b'mokim sharab mitzuyin, shami gets to keep it." So Rav Yitzchak Elchanan says, "Excuse me one second. You might be right that there's such a Gemara, but you got to understand something here. The reason why, if you find an aveda in Rishus Harab, Mokim Sharab Mitzuyin, some you can keep it, is because the owner was Miyayish. The owner of this purse is not the woman, it's her husband. And he was not Miyayish, because he doesn't know that she lost it yet. So you're such a big Talmud Chacham, you forgot the main point. That he was not Miyayish. She is just his shliach. He is the Bailam. He was not Miyayish. You give back the purse." So this psak was spoken about, and it was tumbled about, and all the yeshivas came to the Mir Yeshiva, and I don't know if they're learning Bab Metzi at the time, but everyone was all excited about Rabbi Elchanan, Yitzchak Elchanan's psak, and there was all tumult. The Mashkiach Rabbi Yeruchim called everybody to the Bima, and he said, "Everybody's tumbling about the psak of the Kovner Rav. But I just want to lay to one point that you need to hear from this. You need to know that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam is your Bailam. And he gave you koiches, he gave you talents, he gave you abilities, gave you chachma, and he told you to work and to do mitzvahs and to learn Torah and to shteig. You have no business being miyayish, because you are not the bailam on yourselves. The Rebbeinu Shel Olam is the bailam. You can never give up. You have to do your job. Take the first step in the right direction, but you can never be miyayish because you're not the bailam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Bailam. You are here to use the kaiches you have to work, to invest your kaiches, and to make business HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You can't give up. We all have times we would like to give up. We all have times of frustration, of aggravation, where we feel we fell short. We can't do it. It's not within our personality. But you're not a baldover to give up. You have to make it work. Only HaKadosh Baruch Hu can be miyayish. And the Rebbeinu Shem is never miyayish on his children. There's a maisa I saw about a family. They had a child. The child's name was Ellie. The family's name was Bluth. After Ellie was born, they began to notice after a while that he wasn't developing. And parents have this intuitive way of realizing something's wrong. And as months went by, and there was no progress, they began to go to doctors. And they scoured the country. They traveled thousands of miles back and forth in the United States. And they finally, after many, many months of looking for a doctor, they finally settled on the top team of doctors who deal with childhood disabilities. And after all the tests and all the research, they met with the leader of the group, Dr. Jonathan Gruber. And after he had all of the workup and all of the testing, he sat with them and he said, "Mr. and Mrs. Bluth, take your baby, put him in a room, feed him 3 meals a day, and just wait till he dies." They looked at him shocked. They walked out of his office in a daze. But they decided that they were not going to give up on this kid. But whatever the doctor said, they're not putting their kid in a room and waiting till he dies. So they enrolled him in a school for special needs children, where one of the parents had to be with the child half the day. The tuition costed them $100,000 a year, but they didn't give up. And after 2 years, he started to speak. And after a few years, he started to daven. And he started to learn. And by the time his bar mitzvah rolled around, he was a regular kid. He was a regular kid competing with kids his age. And so they made a bar mitzvah and they invited this group of doctors to see the miracle that had occurred. And Dr. Gruber shows up to the bar mitzvah. And the father couldn't help but go over to Dr. Gruber. Because he had this feeling, this frustration, this anger of what Dr. Gruber had said. And he says to him by the bar mitzvah, "How did you say that to us? How could you be so cruel and tell us to put our kid in a room and wait till he dies?" So Dr. Gruber said, "I'll tell you the truth. I see parents like you all the time. But I knew that you guys wouldn't give up. And I had to motivate you. I had to make you angry enough to want to make you prove me wrong. So I told you what I told you." But the father wasn't happy with the Teretz. But he understood that there are people who give up. And the reason why their son succeeded is because they would never give up. And that's what we have to know. We're Baruch Hashem, not those kind of people. We have our koiches, we have our seichel, we have our talents, we have our abilities. And we certainly have no right to give up. But what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from us, that we try our hardest. We take a small step forward and do the best we can. I want to finish with one last maisa. I'm sure I've said over in the past. It was a maisa that took place during the Holocaust. They went to Kelm. The Nazis took the whole yeshiva out and slaughtered the entire Kelm yeshiva. But before they killed them, Rav Daniel Moshewitz, the Rosh Yeshiva, turned to the Nazi in charge and he said, "I'd like to speak with my students one last time." They gave him permission. And he told his Talmidim that they're about to become korbonos. Their machshava should be pure, their kavona should be tahor, and they're going to become korbonos that would be oila on a mizbeach HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Without any tears, without any screaming, everybody was makabel. And when Rav Daniel Moshewitz finished his drasha, he turned to the Nazi in charge. He said, "I have finished what I have to do. Now you can do what you have to do." And with that, they killed the whole Kelm yeshiva. The word got out. People were inspired by what happened. People couldn't get over the courage, the bravery, the chashivas of way these people met their ultimate death. And people talked about it and were inspired. Then there was another maisa. On the trains to Auschwitz, there was a pregnant woman that wasn't able to get into the train fast enough to satisfy one of the Nazis. So we started to beat her up. There was another Yid there who saw, and he couldn't fathom. It's a pregnant woman walking slowly and you're beating her up? So out of anger he ran, he grabbed the Nazi by the throat and he choked him to death. And as soon as he finished, he was shot with bullets and killed on the spot. But at least there was one less Nazi left in the world. So there was a Yid, Zvi Gottman, who went to the Kavanah Rav, Rabbi Avram Dovber Kahana Shapiro, and he said, Rebbe, you know the Maisa of the Kelmi Yeshiva? Well, let me tell you another story. And he tells him a story about the Yid who choked the Nazi to death. And he says, Rebbe, what is the proper mahalach? I need to know. But the Rav didn't answer him right away. He grabbed the Rav by the lapel and he says, Rebbe, it's halacha l'maisa, I have to know. What should you do? Do you do what Rav Daniel Mashevitz did? Or do you try to kill the Nazi like this Yid did? The Kavanah Rav turned to him and he said, a Yid has to do the best that he can in any situation. If the best you can do is to die al Kiddush Hashem, then that's what you do. If the best you can do is take a Nazi with you, then that's what you do. But in every single situation in life that a Kodesh Baruch Hu wants from us is to do the best that we can. And that's our achrayus. And we have to realize that it's up to us. And just like Aaron took responsibility, we have to take responsibility for ourselves. We have to make the first move, and it's up to us. And no matter what happens, we can never give up. Kadosh Baruch Hu is the Bailam, and we have to do the Maisim. We don't have the right to be Miyayish. We have to try. We have to do the best that we can. Take the first small steps forward, and never, ever to give up.